this special meeting is Assembly of the City of Laurel Ranch, Alaska, on Tuesday, June 20th, 2017, at 5:30 p.m. Roll call, please.
Assemblymembers Gilbert?
Here.
Prasanka? Rooney?
Here.
Decker?
Here.
Powell?
Here.
Mitchell? And Mayor Jack?
Here. Conflict of interest. Does any assembly member have a conflict of interest on the item on the agenda? Persons to be heard. This is an opportunity for any member of the audience to speak on an item that is on the agenda. When the agenda item comes up, you will not have an opportunity to speak on it unless the assembly has specific questions regarding the item. Two people have signed up, or one person, Andrew Scammer. Would you come up forward and state your name and address for the record, please?
Andrew Scambler, 1315 Peninsula Avenue. My prosperity and the prosperity of my family is poured right back into the community in more ways than one. I spend virtually all my disposable income on building supplies and contractors when I can afford one. I spend this money to improve the value of my property, which will directly affect the property tax revenues of my employer, the City of Wrangell. I want to be here in Wrangell. My ability to live and thrive in this community means that my children will grow up in Wrangell and contribute themselves to the richness of the community and its continued viability. I use the word viability because in the midst of this kind of strife, my wife and I go through various contingencies, worst case scenarios and the like. Some of those led us to some things we hate to consider, having to leave Wrangell. I know that I'm a relative newcomer, though I married a born and bred Wrangellite, and that many Wrangellites have had to move on for their own prosperity many, many times in the past. Many in this room know better than I the reality of what happens when a community loses families to economic problems. It's a fact of life and not a good one. All I can say is that my family, like every working family the world over, wants better. I know my union brothers and sisters feel the same way as I do. We want to succeed and to make Wrangell our home. We want to see Wrangell prosper and be able to attract skilled and driven families to work and to thrive here, whether they work in the public sector or for private industry. Wrangell's unionized workers contribute to the prosperity of this community, and I hope that you look on us and our prosperity as an asset to be invested in rather than as a liability. Thank you.
Thank you. We have two items of business this evening. Item 5A, request that the Borough Assembly implement a collective bargaining agreement with International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers, IBEW, 1547, to adopt the city's last offer to the union of June 9, 2017, which offer was rejected by the union. And item 5B, executive session, if needed, to discuss with the borough attorney regarding implementing the collective bargaining agreement between the City and Borough of Wrangell and the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers, IBEW, from the city's last offer of June 9, 2017, which was rejected by the union. We'll start with item 5A.
I move that the assembly implement the collective bargaining agreement with the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers 1547 to adopt the city's last offer to the union of June 9th, 2017, which offer was rejected by the union.
Second.
Been moved and second. Any discussion? Oh, please.
I'm still a little bit running between two places here. Is there not a way for us to table this till after the executive session? So can I? Is this a motion? Okay.
Yeah, sure.
So I move that we table the main motion.
Second.
Thank you. Until after the executive session.
Right.
Correct?
Right.
Okay. So I move we table the main motion until after the executive session. It's been seconded so we can vote on that.
Now we vote.
Okay. So you can call the vote, I guess, or discussion, I guess.
No.
No, no discussion. Is there a second?
Yeah.
Yes. Oh,
yeah, you seconded.
Yeah.
Oh.
Assembly members Gilbert?
Yes.
Persunka?
Yes.
Rooney?
Yes.
Decker?
Yes.
Powell?
Yes.
And Mayor Jack?
Yes. We will recess into executive session at 5:36 p.m.
Yeah. You didn't say so. Okay. Bob, I'll have them call you back from the other office.
Okay. May I ask a question? Is will Carol be in on the executive session?
We didn't.
Can you get us back in so we can include Carol?
Yeah. Yes. Did you want to include Carol?
I think that would be helpful.
Okay.
We have to get them back in.
We're reconvening at 5:37.
I move to include the borough city manager in the executive session.
Second.
We move in second.
Assembly members Persunka?
Yes.
Rooney?
Yes.
Decker?
Yes.
Powell?
Yes.
Gilbert?
Yes.
And Mayor Jack?
Yes. Now we'll recess again at 5:37.
All right. You ready? Okay, go ahead.
We convene this meeting at 6:27 p.m. Anyone have a motion?
I need the motion to remove it from the table.
I move that we take item 5A from the table.
Second.
Then moved and second. Any discussion?
Assembly.
Sorry, we have
discussion.
So
we have discussion.
Vote to move.
No, you need to vote to remove from the table.
And then we discuss.
This is just the vote to remove it from the table.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you.
You ready? Assembly members Rooney?
Yes.
Decker?
Yes.
Powell?
Yes.
Gilbert?
Yes.
Persunka?
Yes.
And Mayor Jack?
Yes.
Now the main motion.
Would you read that so it's clear, please?
Okay. Move to implement the collective bargaining agreement with the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers, IBEW 1547, and to adopt the city's last offer to the union of June 9, 2017, which offer was rejected by the union.
Now we open it up for discussion. Julie.
So I have a number of questions for the finance director.
If you come forward, state your name and address for the record.
Lee Burgess, 8.5 miles of Mobile Highway.
So, Lee, there have been various comments made in the community, and it leads me to think that maybe the complete picture isn't totally clear. And so what I'd like to do is walk through some of the factual information as best we can tonight, so people are getting a bit better, clearer picture of all the different components that we're dealing with. So first, could you describe the three categories of employees when it comes to health insurance benefits in the city right now?
Yes, so the three categories, if you will, I'll say that the first category are permanent benefited employees not represented by the IBEW. Those employees under the current personnel policy would pay 15% of the cost of all insurance premiums for themselves as employees, spouses if enrolled, and a child or children if enrolled. That would be the first category. The second category would include employees represented by the IBEW that were hired before July 1st, 2011. Those employees would not pay any percentage of any health insurance premiums. The third category would be employees represented by IBEW hired after July 1st, 2011. Those employees would pay 0% of health insurance premiums for themselves and 30% of health insurance premiums for their spouse if enrolled, or child or children if enrolled. Those are the three categories that currently exist.
Okay, so kind of to summarize, we have a range of percentages that employees match for health insurance benefits from 0 to 15 to 30, depending on hire date and whether they're union or not.
That's correct.
Okay. So bear with me for a minute. Under the last offer the city made, which is the one that's in front of us that we're talking about in this motion, would some union employees pay less under this new agreement for health insurance than they're currently paying now?
Yes.
Okay, do you know how many employees that would affect that way?
Currently one.
Okay.
Currently there's one employee that pays something for health insurance that under this proposal would pay less for health insurance.
Okay. And are there any city union employees that that have like duplicate health insurance policies? In other words, either they might be covered through them or their spouse by another job or circumstance?
I can't answer that for certain. It's a small community. I think a lot of people know people and know if spouses work somewhere in town, and if they do, they might be privy to those benefit packages. So I suspect that yes, there are some spouses and or children that have other health insurance coverage from somewhere else, but I don't know for sure.
Okay. And so if you look at total health insurance costs for city employees over the last 10 years, how have those increased over 10 years?
A lot. for everyone in Alaska, is my understanding. I a long time ago kind of went back through our old files and tried to figure out what the premiums were and wrote those down. And it looks like to me the insurance premiums have increased by about 60%, 58% to be exact, over the last 10 years. So since 2007, 2008, for example, I think just for an employee alone, the total premium cost just for an employee was $478 in 2007, 2008. This past year was $818.50.
Per month.
Yes, per month. For families, I think I've got that here too. 2007, 2008, it's going to be a similar proportion. It was about $1,500, $1,523 back in 07, 08. This current year that we're in, it's been $2,608 a month for the whole family. Those premiums are going down a little bit, about 8% next year, which is great. So overall they've gone up about 58% over the last 10 years, about 5.8% a year on average.
Okay. Switching from the health insurance component of this agreement, there's a second component about the step wage increases. I'm not sure if I'm using the right terms, but we basically have agreed to remove six of the lower steps and then add three to the higher step. And that, correct me if I'm wrong, that kind of effectively shifts the wage ladder, so to speak, to higher wages. Is that the correct way of looking at that?
Yeah, I would say so. That's correct.
And so there's some employees that were maxed out there on that high end, and they'll have three additional steps with this proposal?
So there's one employee that's been parked at the top step of the wage scale for about 3 years, I think. And then I think there might be one or two others that have recently hit the top step. And then maybe a few more that will hit the top step within the next 1 to 2 years, probably. I don't know that offhand, but that's right.
Okay, so it's not like a across-the-board, increase today, but a few employees may be affected today, and others in the future potentially could be affected positively with wages.
Yes, I think so. To the extent that under the status quo, they wouldn't stand to receive any more step increases, the ones that are at the top of the scale, under this proposal, they would stand to have three more step increases over the next 3 years.
Okay.
And any that are currently in the first six steps that would be eliminated would automatically move up to the new first step, which on the existing pay plan is step 7.
Do you know how many employees would be affected that way?
I believe 3.
Okay, so 3 up on the lower end would be immediately moved up to sort of what step 7 would be.
That's correct.
Would happen.
I believe so.
Okay. And then any new hires also would be hired in at those higher wages?
Yeah, at a minimum, a new hire would be hired in at the new step 1, which is the existing step 7, unless management and or the borough manager wanted to offer something higher than step 1.
Okay. And then the last part of the proposal that we have before us is a 75% per, 75 cents per hour wage increase across the board for all union employees?
Correct.
Okay. Do you know how many employees would have a net gain out of that? So in other words, to balance out the increased cost of health insurance that they may receive?
I think based on my estimates, I can answer that. My estimates are that 14 of the 24 represented positions would, over the next 3 years, receive more in wages as a result of the modifications made, including to the wage table, as well as the 75 cents, than the additional cost that they would pay for health insurance premiums.
Okay.
14 of 24 would have a net benefit, according to my calculations. Yeah.
Okay, so that's as a package?
Yes.
Net benefit from the entire package?
Yes. Yeah, so the calculations I came up with to kind of figure out what it would require to fund this proposal include wages and things tied to wages, such as overtime, vacation, which is actually a fairly small amount, you know, vacation liability based on wages, and but also any employees that would stand to benefit over the next 3 years from the fact that the wage scale itself is being modified. So I tried to come up with a way to quantify that over 3 years, and so my answers to those questions are based on that.
Okay, and one more point of clarification. The step wage increases, those will continue to happen. Those are sort of outside of this one-time 75 cent per hour wage increase across the board. Is that correct?
Yes, there's been no contemplation of changing our policy with regard to annual step increases on employees' anniversary dates.
And can you explain a little bit about usually how that occurs? Is it annually, automatically? How's that decision made?
So as long as I've been here and for years before that, as far as I'm aware, annual step increases have been awarded on anniversary dates of hire, or actually I think it's the first of the month of the month of hire. That's kind of referred to as the anniversary date just for payroll purposes and keeping that simple. So if someone was hired on February 17th, the future anniversary dates would be February 1st. But on the anniversary of hire, it's our policy that supervisors do a performance evaluation and evaluate the job performance of each employee. And if that evaluation is satisfactory, the employee receives a one-step increase on the wage scale. And that's been continued since we started with this wage scale, to my understanding, all the way up through current for all employees that are permanently benefited.
Okay. My last set of questions is about this table that you put together and provided to us, and I think it's up there for the public as well. And it's titled Total Estimated Cost to the Borough of Various Wage Increase Scenarios. Includes wage table modifications tentatively agreed to. So sort of the left-hand side of the page is the cost to the borough for the IBEW workers, the union workers, and then the right side of the page is for non-union workers. And so if I'm correct, I just kind of wanted to walk through what's in a box, the upper box, which is what we offered at 75 cents an hour wage increase across the board. Let me make sure that I have this correct. For the next 3 years, that would cost the borough $252,000, roughly?
Yes, that's my estimate.
And it would sort of cost the employees by the sense that they'd be paying some to their insurance, approximately $175,000?
Yes, with the one clarification, though, that estimate is based on the next year's insurance premium costs, and it's just multiplied by 3 years. I don't know, or have no way of predicting what might happen to the actual insurance premiums, but it also assumes that all employees who have their spouse or children enrolled will not change that, and any that don't also won't change that. So it just basically takes the status quo and extrapolates it out by 3 years. So that estimate is based on those assumptions. Like, if I could plug in different assumptions and I would come up with a different number probably, but I had to use something, and so the status quo is what I used.
Okay. And so sort of the net cost would be to the borough roughly $76,000.
Yeah, that would be the sum of the preceding two columns, the positive cost of the borough and the negative savings to the borough, if you will, of employees paying out, is that number there.
Okay. Now, then, following that to the right, you talk about if we were to take this proposal and apply it across the board to non-union workers as well, and what that might look like. And so you have a 3-year cost of approximately $300,000?
Yeah, just relating to the non-union employees, if the same provisions were implemented across the board, yes.
Okay, and then the next column is 3-year net additional cost. So that includes?
That's all employees. So yeah, the $301,000 would be just the positions not represented by IBEW. The one next to that adds the IBEW cost, net cost, to the
gotcha.
Equation there. So that'd be citywide, the net 3-year cost of this proposal.
Okay, and then the next column, you break it down into what that would mean in an annual cost.
Yeah, that's just that column divided by three.
Okay, so that's about $126,000, what we're talking, annual cost of the borough, if this were to be applied to all city workers.
Correct.
And then the final column, you break that down into what that would be in a property tax mill equivalent.
Right.
And that's 0.92?
Yes, that's, so the additional borough cost per year, it should be that column divided by approximately $137,000, which is the equivalent of 1 mil of property taxes. In other words, if we were to raise property taxes by 1 mil, we could expect to get $137,000 more property tax revenue. So that column was provided only for illustrative purposes. It's not part of the proposal to do anything to property taxes. But it was just included as a contextual way of seeing what that cost means in other terms. And so, yeah, I included that just for informative purposes.
Okay. That's all my questions for Lee.
Assemblymember Decker asked most of my questions, but the one thing I did hear a couple of days ago is that the union employees have not received any raise in the last 3 years during the negotiation. Is that true? Did they not get their step increase?
No, they did.
They did,
except for any employee who would be parked at the top step and has no further steps to receive, which over the last 3 years has been one employee.
Okay, so they did get their step increase?
Yes.
During negotiation. Okay, thanks.
Go ahead, Steve.
Lee, why is this? I want to kind of address something that the IBEW lawyer alluded to in her presentation when she was here, and that was that we had a $7 million reserve, so we're more than flush to take care of spending more money. Why is a reserve important to a municipality, in your opinion, as our finance director? What does it do for us?
Well,
another restricted reserve, sorry.
Yeah, that reserve amount. Probably refers to the general fund reserve. That covers some of the employees represented by IBEW, in that some of the employees are in departments that are general fund departments. Most of them, a greater number, are in utility enterprise funds or ports and harbors, and there's actually one that works at the pool. So, you know, just to keep that in mind, the general fund reserves is for the general fund, and that, you know, that funds finance, administration, fire department, police department, jail, corrections, 911 dispatch, municipal garage, which is IBW represented, public works, which is IBW represented. It also includes planning and zoning, it includes community promotion, it includes the library, includes the cemetery, it includes the subsidy that the general fund provides to the Parks and Recreation Department to the extent that there is an annual operating loss. In other words, they spend more money operating than they do bring in user fees. Same thing with the museum and Nolan Center, or the museum and civic center. The Nolan Center is subsidized by the general fund to the extent that they have an operating deficit, spend more money each year than what they bring in fees. So the purpose of the general fund reserves is to have some money tucked away to be able to run the operational budgets of those departments, and beyond that, to reinvest in capital when it needs to be reinvested in. And you need to make capital purchases because your equipment is too old, or you need to repair buildings because their roofs or siding are just too old, or any other thing that, you know, is part of the city's fixed assets. That money is there so that you can basically provide for those things in the event that you need to, even when there isn't enough revenue in a given year to cover all of those expenses. For example, this year the budget was passed with a considerable general fund deficit. We're able to do that because there are reserves there to spend, and there have been surpluses in recent years that we can apply to some capital improvements that have been deferred for a long period of time. So any of those things I listed are need to be funded by the general fund. And the purpose of reserves is to be able to meet your needs even when money starts going away.
Have we in the past removed steps to this scale or modified the scale in any way?
I don't know the answer to that for certain. When I started here, my predecessor, Jeff J. Bush, said that probably should be done periodically, just because it helps keep the wage ranges kind of moving up with the rate of inflation over time. Mm-hmm. I don't remember. I haven't been here long enough, and I don't remember, and I didn't research that to know if that was done when when any previous contracts were renegotiated and ratified, or if we did it just on our own. I do note that the non-union pay scale is 15 steps, and the union pay scale is 16 steps, so that tells me that at one point someone did something. I believe maybe the city might have hacked off step one, to make the new step one what the previous step two was. That's my assumption, but I'm not for sure.
Thank you.
So, I have something to say, just basically about the public is.
Do you have any more questions for Lee?
No, Lee, I don't. I'm sorry.
Thank you.
Okay.
Unless somebody else does.
I have one question about enterprise funds. Enterprise funds have to generate their own funding for that whole department. For instance, the water department.
Yes.
Including personnel benefits and
yes.
Salaries and everything.
Yes.
So it just occurred to me that if we have union employees concentrated in one enterprise fund other than another, is the only way that we could generate funds to pay an increase in salary, would that be to increase the cost of services for that particular fund, like for port and harbor? And I know that we do transfers into different areas of the city government, but I think we are always object to transferring money into the enterprise funds. Am I correct on that?
Yes, it's written in the charter that enterprise funds will operate from their own money, and that the money from those funds will not be used in the general fund. They basically operate as business-like entities with their own funds kept separate from the general fund.
So this brings up a sticky wicket. I mean, if we've got, as I said, a concentration of union employees in one area, then they're going to have to raise the electric rates or water rates to compensate for that increased obligation. Is that the way it'll play out?
I think theoretically, yes, even if indirectly. Rates are revisited and adjusted if the operational or capital needs of those funds are not being kept up with the revenues. We've recently gone through that process with the water fund, mm-hmm. Given its capital needs. We will probably be going through something similar with the sanitation fund, given its upcoming capital needs. A couple of the other enterprise funds have been able to begin saving money away. Ports and Harbors, they raised their rates fairly significantly. The benefit to doing that, although there was, I think, some disagreement, is that they've been able to plan to tuck more money away in anticipation of Shoemaker Harbor rehabilitation, which the city has to provide a lot of half the funding, more than half the funding. And the more that can be saved away and funded for that, the less debt will need to be taken on in the form of revenue bonds to fund that project. So I think that was a lot of the motivation behind adjusting the harbor rates. The electric funds rates were increased, I think, 7% in 2015, I want to say. And as a result of that, I think they've also been able to do well in terms of, working hard to get the priority list of improvements done. I think they're continuing to do work on that this year, which comes at a cost. But it would have been difficult to do that without those rate increases that were passed. So, I think there are a greater number of employees in the electric and ports and harbors fund that are represented by ADW than, say, water and sewer, which have between them three employees. Sanitation has two. So, I can't say that, approving this plan, let's say, would necessarily result in rate increases. I think a rate increase would be based on the overall picture, of which personnel costs are a fairly significant piece, but not the only one. There's other operational costs and capital needs that need to be taken into account, too, to decide if rates need to be adjusted.
When we had the presentation a week or so ago from the union attorney, there were a couple of reasons that they gave for asking for the rate increase. One was to break even with the insurance reduction that or addition that they were going to have to pay. And the other was that we weren't really in line with other municipalities in Southeast. And I understand you went and looked at Petersburg. How did we kind of fare when you looked at the rates in comparison with Petersburg's pay rates?
So it was either available online on their website or on request of their finance department. They have, my understanding is there are two unions representing workers in Petersburg. One is called PMEA, I don't know what that stands for, and then the IBEW. I think the IBEW only represents their electric. Those wage scales that relate to those agreements were available either by request or online, I don't remember. But I took those and I figured I'd make them available for people to look at. I included the attachments, so you can see, what some of those positions say, what their position title is. I can't speak to their job descriptions or if the duties are identical or not, but a lot of the names are similar. So I took my best stab at aligning those job titles on these pages that are from those collective bargaining agreements with the corresponding job titles that we have. I guess. There's kind of a mix. Some positions pay more in Petersburg than in Wrangell. Other positions appear to pay more in Wrangell than in Petersburg. But the comparison that you're looking at in terms of this attachment shows the proposed wage scale. So you have to kind of keep in mind what's being compared. If you were to compare our old wage scale, step one, to the Petersburg attachments in their PMEA contract or the IBEW contract, I think it would probably be considerably less in a lot of cases. But alternatively, if you look at the maximum wage, some positions continue to, even under the proposal, be paid a little bit less than Petersburg, it looks to me. And other positions under the proposal would be paid more than they earn in Petersburg at the maximum. So I guess the only other thing I can say about that is that that's not a comprehensive wage and benefit analysis to come up with a perfectly comparable apples-to-apples comparison. And the only real way to do that that I would recommend is an independent firm that specializes in those. I don't have time to nitpick over job descriptions and comparability. I know that a firm that would be more specialized in it would look at the bases of comparison that are valid, such as economic similarities or differences, geographic similarities or differences, demographic similarities or differences, and then they would probably do a minimum number of job duty matches between positions to determine if there's equivalence there. Anyway, it would be a long kind of involved process. It would cost a bit of money, but it's in our personnel policy that wage and benefit studies are done periodically because it would provide, I think, the most amount of objectivity and, you know, kind of professionalism and honesty, really, in terms of, you know, don't take my word for it, I'm the finance guy, you know. Other communities have done them. Even Sitka, who has a dedicated human resources director, that's still not enough for them not to commission an independent firm to come in and do a comprehensive wage study. So I presented it because it's brought up to me often. Claims are made that, you know, we get paid way less than Petersburg, you know, and I don't know if that's true. All I can do is look at the evidence and ask for other finance offices to send me their wage scales. And so, you know, I tried to include a little bit just for reference, but again, it's not. I'm not stating that it's a perfect comparison. It's just what I found.
Thank you.
So that made me think of a few more questions. Do you know when the last wage study was made? I didn't know it was a part of the personnel policies.
I don't. I think it was in the 2000s. We've been asked to go dig that up and provide it. I haven't been able to find it. I don't have it in my office. We've looked at records to see if we know where we can track it down and see what box it's in. But it's been long enough that I don't think it would really be trusted by anybody, even another wage and benefit, you know, firm, as to its, you know, the usefulness of its information. The market changes too much in that amount of time. So they'd probably recommend that you just kind of, you know, I don't know what they would do with it. But no, I haven't been able to find it, but I think it was in sometime between maybe 2004 and 2007 or 8. Someone else might know.
Likely 10 years at least.
Yeah.
Okay. There's a couple other things that when people were asking more questions came to my mind. So in actually last year's finalized budget, city budget, and toward the back you had some charts and sort of some generalized information that and to me really helps paint a picture that, again, is something that we deal with at this table is a lot of generals and specifics to trying to make everything work in a budget, right? So revenues coming in, you know, expenses and trends over time and that sort of thing. So one of the pages talks about major general fund revenues. And there's 6 different sources of general fund revenue and the trend between 2009 and 2017. Basically, revenues, general fund revenues in 2009 were 7.1 million in round numbers, and in 2017 were 6.37 million. So a reduction roughly 800,000 or so. That rings a bell?
Yeah, I remember what the graph looks like.
So trending down over the last 10 years or so.
Yeah, I would say flat to downward. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And then the citywide personnel costs for the same years, you have wages, overtime, tax, PERS, health insurance, workers' comp. So the total cost to the city and city taxpayer of a city employee. So in total numbers, in 2009, that was 5.2 million in round numbers, and in 2017, it was 7 million.
Okay.
But generally, over time, increases. So, I mean, from where I sit, I generally see general fund revenues going down over 10 years, and wages going up, not just wages, total costs for an employee, and that's a real important piece for us when we look at these things is not just wage, not just health insurance, the entire package of the cost of that position. And anyway, I want the public to understand those are the kinds of numbers that we're trying to balance with, as Assembly Member Gilbert mentioned, in every single one of our enterprise funds where we charge fees for services, our rates are going up. At least in the last 3 years, I think almost every single one of our funds have gone up. Electrical, Ports and Harbor, sewer and water previously, water recently. So we're maxed out on sales tax already at 7%. So, you know, the wiggle room is in property mill rates. So I appreciated that comparison, that table where you sort of equated things to what it would mean in a property mill rate increase, because it's important information for us to make it in a decision like this. Not that it would have to be that way. You know, we could make further cuts. We could, you know, but what we've seen is we've had very tight, I think, infrastructure budgets, and we're starting to see some failings, water treatment plant and other areas, where we have to put some money in and the state's not going to foot that bill anymore. So, anyway, I think I'm done.
Any further questions for Lee? Thank you, Lee. Welcome.
Okay, so I just want to clarify something. So I got a few things. Today I read, basically, the union workers want more contract talks. Okay, but what I understand, the city made the last offer, and we're not going to bid against ourselves. So the way I look at it is, if you're not going to come back with a counter offer, it puts us at an impasse as an assembly. So I don't know where we can go from here other than what we're doing right now, because you guys never came back with a counter offer, and I just want the public to know that with the city making the last offer, they're not going to bid against themselves. So I just want the public to know out of that KSTA article that that's where we're at with this. And I just wanted to clarify that with the public.
Any further discussion?
I just wanted to say one thing. For me, this comes down to sustainability, that whatever we agree to as an assembly, we have to be able to sustain it down the road. And we have to look at the long-term effects to the community. And that it's for me, I'm not, you know, that is key, that whatever it is that's offered has to be good 20 years from now. We gotta be able to keep maintaining what it is. And I'm extremely worried about the current fiscal situation in the state and the fact that we don't even know what's coming down the pipe yet from the state, that timber receipts could be gone next year, we don't know, which would leave our schools in funding deficits, and that if the state came forward and did a sales tax scheme, that could cut our sales tax dramatically. If they capped it at 10% and they took 7%, that would leave us 3%, which is less than half of what we currently have. Unfunded mandates from the state, senior and disability tax exemptions on the first $100,000 of your property cost us over $1 million a year. Used to be a funded mandate, now it's an unfunded mandate. And we don't have the revenues that other communities have, if you have a major industry in play, those revenues are not there. I know I've had some community members say to me, but we've got $7 million. So $7 million is a drop in the hat and will go away pretty darn quick. I know it seems like a lot of money to the average person, but to a municipality, it's not a lot. We're already, our hospital is living with less, many times, less than 30 days operating capital in their reserve, which is, it's unfathomable to me that we would have that situation, but we have to be prepared. We may have to step in and help the hospital. Infrastructure is aging, and we know already, luckily I think the electric department's doing a great job in-house fixing and repairing things, but we know our infrastructure is aging, our buildings are aging, our fire trucks are aging, and we kicked the can down the road for a lot of years, and now it's coming that we've got to replace some stuff. So my big thing is that whatever we accept, it has to be something that we can afford. And there's a lot of unknowns out there right now, and I'm very concerned about that. So I think it's important the community understands it's not a matter of that I don't want to give people raises, it's a matter of I want to be able to pay the wages or raises that we get.
Anything further? Paul Wolf, please.
Assembly members Decker?
Yes.
Powell?
Yes.
Gilbert?
Yes.
Prasanka?
Yes.
Rooney?
Yes.
And Mayor Jack?
Yes. That is it for our agenda this evening. We will adjourn at 7:06 p.m.